everybody. Bill Buckmaster with you, along with my buddy Tom Fairbanks on the other side of the glass, engineering and producing our show. Tom, we had a beautiful morning this morning. That's the lower 50s. And
isn't this where we break into song? Oh, what a beautiful morning.
Yeah, I tell you, I was ready. And the plants are starting to recover after that huge hailstorm. I was very worried, but it looks like they will recover. The Buckmaster Show and the Green Things Zocalo Village Studio on the campus of Bustos Media Tucson, where we have five radio stations in our growing empire under one roof. This radio station is 1030 KVOI, the voice for Tucson's trusted source for news and talk. And we'll begin, the Buckmaster Show will begin year 14. I am ready, never been more ready for a new year in January for our radio show, start of my 36th year on TV and radio here in this particular market. We have our worldwide live listening podcast. And I don't, Eddie Salaya, I don't even look a day under 40.
I'm 35. Yeah.
Whoa, there you go. That's why you're my co-host today. The Buckmaster Show live listening and our live line presented by Rincon Ventures, Real Estate and Property Management. Quick shout out, TucsonSentinel.com. Thanks, Dylan, and your team there. The Green Valley News, Sahorita Sun, Dan Shear, the Tucson Local Media Group. They have a portfolio including Inside Tucson Business, Tucson Weekly, Oro Valley Explorer, Marana News, Foothills News, and Desert Times. Eddie Salaya is my guest co-host today. Eddie is always a very busy guy. He covers breaking news for the Arizona Daily Star, and he hosts a very popular podcast, which has now gone national. It's based here in Tucson, called Hear Weed, W-E-E-D, Go, which just celebrated its 75th anniversary. Not anniversary, it's 75th podcast.
I'm hoping for a 75th anniversary.
75
if I,
years.
I should be so lucky.
Eddie graduated from Pima Community College in the University of Arizona. He's been with the Star since May of 2019. Our Friday Focus interview on the Buckmaster Show, Fred Duvall, return visit to our program, chair of the Arizona Board of Regents, which oversees the state's three universities. Regent Duvall previously served on the board from 2006 to 2012, a former White House deputy assistant. Fred Duvall ran as the 2014 Democratic nominee for governor of Arizona. He's currently president of Duvall & Associates. He's the founder of the Institute for Civil Discourse at the University of Arizona. And during his second term on the board, Regent Duvall envisioned the Arizona Teachers Academy, which offers students covered tuition and fees for their program of study if they agree to teach in Arizona public schools. Also, he's been at the forefront of the board's Arizona Healthy Tomorrow initiative, designed to address the critical healthcare workforce shortage in Arizona, including creating a new medical school at ASU. So there is a lot to unpack, Fred Duvall. Fred, how are you?
I'm doing good. Thanks for letting me be on the show, and congratulations on 14 years on this show. You've had quite a legacy in Southern Arizona.
Yeah, a long time here in town, and very thankful for all of it. All right, Fred Duvall, hundreds of college campuses have become the focus of debate over what constitutes free speech. Of course, since the attack by Hamas and Israel's ongoing response, there's been really bitter debates on so many college campuses, and I find it very concerning, all the anti-Semitism that we're seeing. What's your take on what's going on when it comes to free speech on our campuses?
Oh, it's a fast start, but it's the right opening question. It is challenging times on campuses around free speech for a number of reasons. The first is that campuses are built to be places where speech is robust. I mean, the whole point is to create a learning environment where people can feel comfortable expressing different points of view. And from that, we grow, we educate, we broaden our horizons. It obviously gets very difficult when you're dealing with issues of evil, of hate, of violence. And, you know, there's no general rule that can be applied. Each issue has to be kind of weighed on its own. It's just difficult because everyone, whatever their point of view on any issue, wants more speech for their view and less speech for the other view. And how you protect those guardrails on one hand and yet call out those instances like Hamas where you simply have evil is very difficult. And, you know, we're sorting through it every day. We deal with it on this issue, but frankly, we deal with it on a variety of other issues. This one just obviously happens to be so dramatic and painful and extraordinary and awful that, you know, it is seized the moment.
How are our three universities handling it, in your opinion?
They are expressing, the presidents are expressing their intolerance, their disdain, their condemnation of these unthinkable acts of violence that occurred at the hands of Hamas in Israel. At the same time, want to preserve the opportunity for people to express free speech. Now, you know, it's very difficult. There is no place for anyone to advocate violence. It's very difficult when many people in the context of their free speech are supporting these vile acts. You know, what our presidents can't do is call balls and strikes on every particular issue, but it is to strike the right balance between calling out evil when it exists, but also creating an environment for people to express points of view.
All right, let's bring in Eddie Celaya of the Arizona Daily Star. Eddie?
Hi, Fred. I want to talk a little bit about a more specific incident here in Tucson where President Robbins actually got out ahead of a protest. It was going to be a pro-Palestinian protest on campus and said that, you know, that it wasn't the, you know, in the communities, or excuse me, the University of Arizona community's support, basically. What is the appropriate response for a university president when it does come to these sort of protests that maybe the university community doesn't support as a whole, but still have the right to, you know, hold the protest?
You know, you'll have to ask him about his, these were personal views that he expressed. Mm-hmm. I think that, boy, you know, the country is filled with different calibrations of how to respond to this. President Robbins said what he said and understand why and received a lot of praise for it, some criticism for it. It's the nature of the job. Every campus climate is different. Every individual president is different. And you'd have to ask him specifically as to where he landed, where he did. I know that he speaks for many Arizonans and Americans that the actions of Hamas are simply need to be condemned. And he did. And, you know, choices that student organizations made as a result are for them to discuss, pros and cons, not for us.
I want to also talk about another incident that happened up at ASU. It is kind of removed from the Israel-Palestine conflict, but there was an incident with a professor who was confronted by two Turning Point, I forget the exact name, but Turning Point reporters or supposed reporters, and there was a physical altercation. What are these sort of, what is the universities, both NAU, U of A, ASU, what are their approaches going forward going to be towards these kind of aggressive groups like Turning Points and others?
Right. This was sadly almost predictable. In fact, Michael Crow, when he learned that Turning Point had what they called a watch list, which was a group of faculty that they were, quote unquote, watching and interpreting watching as meeting them at their offices and at their classrooms with cameras and then verbally assaulting them with highly incendiary accusations in order to get a response. It's happened on all three of our campuses. It's recurring. And our first goal is to create an environment of safety for our faculty and our students. This particular case did go over the line in that after a couple minutes of being taunted with really vile accusations, the professor put up his hand to the camera to try and sort of stop the filming. And the provocateurs viewed that as an invitation to throw him to the ground, which they did. And he suffered injuries as a result. There is no room for violence ever. Everyone has a right to be on our campuses. Everyone has a right to speech on our campuses. There's no place for violence. And, President Crowe predicted this kind of behavior, which is motivated by the social media's insatiable need for likes and engagement. And so the idea and the motivation was to create an incident that could go viral. It couldn't be more unhealthy. And look, free societies distinguish themselves by resolving differences through other tools, debates and elections and courts, but not with weapons, be it billy clubs or cameras. And, history teaches us what happens when democratic civil society lose their way and cultural police believe that they have the right and authority to apply their values in a way that crosses the line into violence, to intimidate others from expressing theirs. It's intolerable. And, campuses are big places. We have ASU has 7,000 courses. There are probably about 11,000 courses across the state of Arizona universities. They're going to have lots of professors with lots of different personal histories and points of views. That's the nature of universities. And for this organization to single people out that they disagree with and to use those kind of tactics is, something that we must call out.
All right. We're speaking with the chair of the Arizona Board of Regents. Fred Duvall is with us on our live line presented by Rincon Ventures Real Estate and Property Management. Got about 4 minutes before we take our first break, so I'm going to dive into this. The healthcare issue is so big here. And Fred, you've been very out front on this Arizona Healthy Tomorrow. Look what's been accomplished here just in this calendar year. You had April, University of Arizona announcing it would double the number of doctors graduating from its medical school. In June, ASU announcing the launch of a new medical school. And then in September, up in Flagstaff, up in NAU, an effort to get more healthcare workers into the system. It's been a good year as far as moving forward to try to stem, let's put it this way, to try to increase the number of healthcare professionals in Arizona.
Bill, that's right. So there's some context here. Let me say a couple things. First, you'll recall, I'm the son of the founding dean of the College of Medicine in Tucson. So this is unfinished business because we need statewide productivity of more doctors, nurses, and allied health professionals. Why? So 30 years ago, Arizona had about the national average in terms of the number of health practitioners for every 1,000 citizens. We are now 48. And most Arizonans, I've certainly had this experience, know that getting a doctor's appointment is increasingly difficult. When you can't get a doctor's appointment, what happens? You either neglect your health, you have all kinds of other ramifications, or you get it in the emergency room, which is the most expensive and inefficient point of care. We need more physicians, allied health nurses, all of it. And, the old line that the best time to plant a tree is 20 years ago and the second best day time is now, that's how we feel about this. We were probably overdue, but we are hitting the accelerator with everything we've got to try and catch up and get back to a place where Arizona citizens are served with enough professionals to meet their needs on a timely basis in order to keep us healthy, keep us productive, grow our economy, live long and successful lives. So yes, we're doing it all three schools, and it's going to require state investment. It's going to require private sector investment from partners and providers. Got a lot of work ahead of us, but we got to do it.
Eddie, you want a quick follow-up about reaction maybe from the University of Arizona?
Yeah. The university here has always kind of had a monopoly in state on the med schools. Was there any pushback? Was there any sort of, we'd like a say from the higher ups at the medical school here at the University of Arizona?
No. I really compliment all three of our presidents in this regard. I mean, I grew up in Tucson, and at a time when, boy, everything was defined by the rivalries between the campuses, and that's been true for a long time. It's still true on the athletic field. It is not true in our collective need, desire, and commitment to serve the state of Arizona. And so President Robbins, to his credit, now, A, he's been assigned to double the number of doctors. And he, as you know, he's got a College of Medicine in both Tucson and Phoenix. So he's got his own agenda and his own assignment. But as a physician himself, he understands that this is about our service requirements and that the only way to get to scale is to license all three to move forward. Now, if I can add one other point, they are different. They're going to be in different lanes. The U of A will continue to produce the traditional MDs in the fashion that it has. ASU will be doctors who simultaneously get an engineering degree. And they will be doctors that will be focused on the engineering of medicine. That's everything from the technology of wearables and things of that kind to telemedicine and the way we receive our healthcare through technology. NAU will be focused on rural medicine and tribal medicine, where the gaps of service are even more pronounced.
Quick follow-up. Will the University of Arizona's medical campus in Phoenix remain there with that same mission, or will that kind of be ASU's now?
Yes, no. Full steam ahead with what we've got. We're growing more everywhere we can.
All right, let's take a break right here. Fred Duvall sticks around. We'll have another segment with Regent and Chair Fred Duvall. But right now I want to talk about Mona's Danish Bakery, home of the Danish Kringle. Eddie, are you up for something from Mona's?
My God, yes.
Who isn't? Mona's is open at 6:30. People are in line when the doors open. They want their pastries. They want them right out of the oven. They're open right now for lunch. They do a great lunch as well. Their website's monasdanishbakery.com. And Steve and his team will be extremely busy in the next couple of weeks because we've got the lead up to Thanksgiving, his busiest time of the year. So I know I'll be putting in my order for dinner rolls. And, of course, people will be putting in orders for their Thanksgiving table for their pies. So they're going to be really busy. But we'll be hearing more about that in the coming days when we talk about Mona's. But right now, let's take a break more with Fred Duvall and talking the university system right after this.
Family-owned Jam Culinary Concepts and its family of restaurants has you covered for your special event. Jam caters anytime, anywhere, any size group, and any type of cuisine. Vero Amore, authentic Neapolitan pizza, and Noble Hops. Craft beer and fine fare are synonymous with quality. Call 954-1468 or log on to jamculinaryconcepts.com.
The Regional Transportation Authority's 20-year plan includes roadway, transit, pedestrian, bicycle, and many other transportation improvements across the region. Pima County voters approved the plan in 2006, and the RTA is working with the Citizens Advisory Committee to prepare and present a new draft plan to the RTA board by December. Sign up at rtanext.com for updates.
Buckmaster Show listeners know that I'm passionate about travel. When I'm ready to take off on a new adventure, my air travel begins and ends at Tucson International Airport. TUS is nonstop for our community and Southern Arizona. So remember, to fly local, fly Tucson. Tucson International is nonstop for Tucson. More at flytucson.com.
Thinking about a river cruise? Let Bon Voyage Travel guide you to choose the perfect cruise to complement your vacation dreams. River cruising has become more popular than ever, and we know you have so many options to consider when selecting the destination, cruise line, and ship. At Bon Voyage Travel, we provide a comprehensive presentation on the top tips for river cruises and have a team of specialists to assist you. Visit bvtravel.com and view our River Cruise 101 presentation today.
The The Green Valley News and Sarita Sun cover two of Arizona's most desirable communities. The newspapers reach more than 75% of the communities each week, with a combined population of more than 50,000. The Green Valley News also publishes a dozen magazines each year, and both newspapers publish up-to-the-minute local news online at gvnews.com. The Green Valley News and Sarita Sun, it's all right here.
Cushman & Wakefield PICOR is Tucson's leading independently owned full-service commercial real estate company. Founded in 1985, Cushman & Wakefield PICOR offers leasing, sales, and property management for industrial, office, medical, retail, land, and investment properties in Tucson and Sonora, Mexico. Visit our website at PICOR.com for the latest news from Tucson's commercial real estate sector. That's PICOR.com. Call us at 748-7100.
Welcome back. It is the Buckmaster Show in the Green Things Zocalo Village Studio, our live line for our telephone interviews presented by Rincon Ventures Real Estate and Property Management. On the live line is the chair of the Arizona Board of Regents, Fred Duvall. And for folks that don't know, the Board of Regents, a very powerful entity in the state of Arizona because they oversee the state's three universities. Eddie Celaya is with me today. He is my guest, co-media anchor host. And Eddie, I'm going to let you start off with Regent Duvall here in segment two.
So Fred, I was reading through the Arizona Board of Regents' most recent annual report this morning, and a certain statement really jumped out to me, and it was that all Arizonans should benefit from our universities. And I assume that means folks who moved from out of state, who are not going to be coming and getting degrees from the University of Arizona for whatever reason. What's an example of a benefit that somebody who might not attend a in-state university here in Arizona that they could benefit from?
Sure. Thank you. There are a couple I would give you. First is that college graduates are significantly more likely to start businesses, become employers, add economic additive value to our economy. So in that sense, there's clearly a benefit. Secondly, is that to the extent that we are upskilling our students and citizenship in Arizona, that upskilling will manifest in more businesses being able to find smart talent and come to Arizona in order to hire our smart talent, which drives wage growth. Third is that the universities are filled with problem-solving research of all kinds around, I mentioned wearable technology medicine a few minutes ago, obviously renewable energy. The University of Arizona is leading in space. OSIRIS-REx just came back with its soil from Bennu. We have a long list of areas where the university's research portfolio is solving local, state, and national problems. COVID would be a great example. The University of Arizona was one of the leading campuses, leading research arms in the world in dissecting wastewater to determine and isolating where COVID outbreaks were occurring so that it could be managed. Those are incalculable benefits to our economy and to our quality of life.
As a sort of follow-up to that, I spent my first 2 years of higher education, at Pima Community College, and there are a number of community colleges throughout the state. What is done by the board to help kind of foster relationships between the three main four-year universities and the other two-year community colleges throughout the state?
I'm so glad you asked. It is something where we are considered literally a national best practice. About 15 years ago, we started something called ArizonaTransfer.com, and it enables students to literally go on a website and determine that they want to take an accounting course at Pima Community College, and then maybe an economics course at the University of Arizona, and then maybe even a business course online at ASU or U of A or wherever, and all of it matriculate towards a degree. We have sought to create seamless transferability of credits so that, granted, many community college students are either going to pick up a skill or to pick up the 2-year degree for just that purpose, but many exposed to the value of more education want to make sure that they can convert those credits and those courses into a four-year degree, and we've made it virtually seamless to do so.
The University of Arizona budget came in at, let's see, $2.7 billion, the annual budget. Now, this includes shoehorned into the budget is the UA Global Campus. And Fred Duvall, as you know, the Global Campus has been controversial. Is it a good deal to have it part of the University of Arizona system?
Here's what is involved in that decision. First is that Arizona has traditionally, historically, been an underinvestor. The state has been an underinvestor relative to other states. We went into the recession and took severe cuts, deepest cuts in the United States, and the restoration of that investment has been slow. And in fact, last year, the universities were the only state-supported entity to take a cut. My point of saying that is that how do you create tools of diversification of your offering in a fashion that does a number of things? One is that maintains your brand. Two is that you have something which is appealing to out-of-state and foreign students who will pay full price. And third is how can you also add a component of lower-cost courses so that you can educate more students at a lower cost because of the dynamics of state support declining and tuition growth getting to a point where people, you know, it's just simply not sustainable. Those schools that have a heavy online presence have more cushion financially than those who don't. And so the University of Arizona, for reasons having to do with its mission as a land-grant university to try and serve as many students as possible, sought to do this. And secondly, is online by its nature, because it is borderless, it enables students, just as our students in Tucson can choose to go to Southern New Hampshire University online or ASU online, it's also true that students around the country could go on UAGC online. What will happen, just like insurance companies, airlines, when the forces of scale and nationalization occur, is that many schools will have a national platform and online, and most will not. And the University of Arizona is seeking to both cushion and harden its balance sheet on one hand and create a sustainable level of scale for the long term on the other, and those are appropriate goals.
Growing the brand is so important, isn't it?
It's huge. It's absolutely huge, because here is sort of the painful reality about Arizona higher education, and that is that the Arizona attainment rates are flat. We have record enrollment. It's out-of-state students because they like our brand, they like our weather, they like our offering. That's a good thing. They pay full price. We're able to use some of that income from their full price tuition in order to create state financial aid for Arizona students so that the actual average Arizona student is only paying $2,000-$4,000 a year, depending on their circumstances, enabling us to get more Arizona students their degree. That's a good thing. That's all brand driven. And so it is really important, Bill, to your question, that Arizona continue to offer programs that students out of state want. But it is a fragile position to be in, because we are at the whim. Other states can change their destiny. India, China, other nations can change their offerings. And so we are, you know, placed our future in other people's hands. I would wish that we could create a relationship with the state where the investment level is what it used to be back, you know, when in the 80s and 90s, when Tommy Goodwin in Tucson chaired the Appropriations Committee. And you know, we were able to really provide a value service for Arizona at a price point that most Arizona families could afford.
All right, here's Eddie Salaya of The Star.
So, Fred, I want to skip around topics again. I'm sorry about that. But I want to talk a little bit about sports and specifically coaches' contracts. You know, there is a big game coming up this weekend down here in Tucson, Oregon State versus Arizona. We're hopefully going to kick some butt here. But as you know, as coaches move on throughout their contracts and they do better, as is the case with Coach Fish here, those contracts get renegotiated. What are those negotiations like for you there at the Arizona Board of Regents, and what goes into the consideration of number one, extending a contract, and then also upping that contract when it comes to pay?
Sure. Extensions are much easier because if you've got a winning record and you know based upon the volume of recruiters that are coming to steal your coaches, if they're winning coaches, you know the market forces are transparent, evident, and you must respond to them to keep good talent. The harder one is how do you price a new coach? That is really challenging and hard. But I'll tell you this, in terms of, we've talked about balance sheets at universities. Why do coaches make so much money? As someone who started the Arizona Teachers Academy, it just crushes me that we pay teachers $35,000 a year and we pay these coaches millions and millions. But filling a stadium solves every financial problem at a university. And, thank goodness for, Wildcat basketball, because most states, state universities, don't have two sports. They rely just on football. We're able to rely on basketball. But, the basketball arena is filled. To have a winning football program puts people in seats. It puts enormous cash revenue, both in terms of tickets and all the ancillary, merchandising and everything else that comes with it. And boy, having that financial cushion is a gift when you face recessions and cuts and everything else that you have to deal with.
You know, excuse me, Eddie, I was just going to follow up with that because we had President Robbins on the show recently, and he said this whole deal with image likeness for athletes has changed the game so dramatically, and he really wondered aloud here on the program whether the whole way we're going in college sports is sustainable. What are some of your thoughts, Fred Duvall?
So that it is not. And he has emerged as one of the nation's leading thinkers about the future of college athletics. I really give him great credit. And if I could digress, I want to just give him his due. He and Michael Crow, but President Robbins in particular, the way in which they dealt with the Pac-12, Big 12 dynamics was exquisite. It was brilliant. They remained loyal to the Pac-12, a conference that served us well. It's, schools that are close to us, schools that have similar academic reputations. It's a good neighborhood. They stuck in until the last moment, but they had Plan B ready to go and hit the send button within minutes of learning that other schools were exiting the Pac-12 and the Pac-12 was going to die. And President Robbins singularly gets credit for doing that. And keeping the two schools together and the territorial cup alive is just really valuable, and I give him a lot of credit. It's not sustainable because all of this private money is going to end up moving towards certain schools, and you're going to end up with significant gaps in tiering between some schools that are playing the private money game to the max and those who continue to centralize academics and a holistic college experience as their principal value. And you'll have a separation into sort of a semi-pro league on one hand and everybody else on the other. And it's going to be really hard to navigate. And it's just frankly not healthy, but it's the world we've inherited.
In that world of have and have nots, U of A basketball, I could see maybe making it into that that rarefied air of a semi-pro kind of setup that you're almost alluding to there. However, a lot of the other revenue sports, both at ASU and U of A, while they're improving, the reality for them might not be as shiny. What is the board's approach? What are the university's approach to a future that, we're not Alabama, that is maybe not as clear as it is for some other Ohio States, USC's, and let's just say bigger programs?
Sure. Philosophically, we believe that the presence of sport is a healthy component to a great college experience. A great college experience leads to retention and graduation rates, and it leads to successful out-of-state recruiting, as I mentioned before, at full price. So it's an additive component to both the cultural and financial aspects of running a university. And so we seek to maintain all of our sports franchises as best we can. But I don't want to mislead that the financial dynamics around name, image, and likeness on one hand, and the evisceration of revenue sources, particularly the state on the other, these are perilous times and choices are always reviewed. But we start from a committed premise that having a robust offering of sports is additive in every possible way.
All right, let's go back quickly to the Arizona Teachers Academy. How is it doing?
Terrific, Bill. Thank you. We're at about 3,200 students this year. We need to get to about 15,000, believe it or not, in order to get to scale. Governor Hobbs has spoken a lot about the retention issue. This is the contaminant within the system, is that we're now adding more teachers at the front end of the pipeline, but they're not staying. The combination of salary stress, classroom stress, classroom size, there's a number of factors that go into it. They're not staying, and we've got to figure that out. The design of the Teachers Academy was really motivated. One is to get more students to make a rational choice. They could afford to pick teaching rather than something else. But second is to eliminate the debt load, which lingers with these teachers going out and making $35,000 and $40,000 a year, but carrying a debt load back on your financial aid, it becomes impossible. And it has the effect of basically being a salary increase in the form of eliminating that debt obligation. So we just simply hope to grow it to the scale where we can replace every teacher. There are 1,200 classrooms in Arizona in September that didn't have a full-time credentialed teacher. No parent should ever have to hear that.
Yeah, that's too bad. Some districts now are, as we were talking about on the program yesterday, as you probably know, Fred, some not usually in Phoenix or Tucson, bigger districts, are going to a four-day work week to try to entice as a come on to new teachers.
Yes. Folks are, school districts are recruiting teachers on one-year contracts from overseas. They are going, as you mentioned, to the four-day work week. They've got classrooms in Arizona with 55 students. They're trying to survive, but it's not sustainable, much less it is far from optimization.
All right, Fred Duvall, chair of the Arizona Board of Regents. Always a pleasure. Thank you very much for the time, Fred.
Thank you both. Thank you, Eddie and Bill. Good to be with you.
Thank you very much. All right, we'll take a break right here. I'm going to talk with Eddie about a couple of issues right after we take the break on the Buckmaster Show, a Friday edition.
Dine in or take out authentic Neapolitan wood-fired pizza at Vero Amore, where every flavorful pizza, pasta, and panini are homemade using the finest local and imported ingredients. Vero Amore, Plaza Palomino at Swan and Fort Lowell, and on Dove Mountain in Marana, plus a full catering menu and mobile pizza truck for parties and events. Vero Amore, on the web at veroamorepizza.com.
Are you happy with the news you get? While not all news is good news, you know good reporting when you see it. Check TucsonSentinel.com every day for breaking news and investigative reports. Have your say in the comments. It's all in TucsonSentinel.com, your local, independent, nonprofit news. You can rely on TucsonSentinel.com for solid reporting about immigration, Tucson and penal politics, everything from the border to baseball. It's independent news without the spin. TucsonSentinel.com. We are watching Tucson.
This is Bill Buckmaster urging my listeners to join me in becoming a member of the Reed Park Zoo, one of America's top zoos and home to more than 300 animals from all over the world. When you become a zoo member, you receive free daytime admission, discounts on special events and education programs, and so much more. Find out more about zoo membership and everything you need to know about your zoo visit, reedparkzoo.org. Family-owned and run since 1985, Moe's Gallery and Fine Framing is the gold standard for quality and professionalism for picture framing, custom frame mirrors, art for your walls, and hanging and lighting solutions. Come in for your design session or set it up electronically. Moe's Gallery and Fine Framing, Fort Lowell and Dodge, and now doing e-commerce at moesgallery.com.
For more than a half century, Tucson Gardeners Trust Green Things, a family-owned and operated retail and wholesale plant nursery, offering an amazing variety of plants, trees, cacti, pottery, and so much more, all at great prices. The 13.5-acre site by the Rito River is also home to the Zocalo Village, specializing in fine Mexican and Latin American imported furniture and art. Green Things open daily at 3384 East River Road and at greenthingsaz.com and zocalovillage.com.
Nestled in the foothills of the Santa Rita Mountains of southeastern Arizona is Equine Voices and Sanctuary, home to horses and burros that were rescued from neglect, abuse, abandonment, and slaughter. Please consider Equine Voices Rescue and Sanctuary with a financial gift of support and estate remembrance. Learn more about our vision and values at equinevoices.org.
Welcome back. It is the Buckmaster Show. Good interview with Fred Duvall. Eddie, thank you very much for your participation. Eddie Celaya of the Arizona Daily Star is with us. Eddie covers breaking news, and he also has now done 75.
That's right.
Here We'd Go podcasts. That's a lot of podcasts in the past 2 years, right?
It is.
You're doing real well with that program. What is new on the marijuana front in Arizona?
Oh, well, there were just 4 Soulflower dispensaries opened up here in Tucson. Well, the Tucson area. 3 of them are north of River Road, 2 north of River Road, 1 right on River Road, River and First, and then another on Valencia Road, south of town in the Drexel Heights area.
How do you get a dispensary?
Ooh, they're all issued by the state, and they're all very well controlled. These 4 dispensaries were all issued as part of the social equity round of licensing, which was about 1.5 years ago now, and those licenses are all kind of activating now. That's why you're seeing a lot of dispensaries both in Phoenix and Tucson start to open up. They had a time limit on them, and most people interpreted that as they needed to open by the end of October to meet that.
Is the whole marijuana scene transitioning into wellness like yoga and things like that?
It really is. I'm glad you asked me about that, because last weekend I actually went to an event at the downtown Clifton called Stoner Stretch.
And Stoner Stretch?
Yeah. And so for the 30 minutes before we stretched, we actually partook in some cannabis, and you can bring your own and eat edibles or take tinctures. We just happened to smoke ours, and then for about an hour after that, we stretched, and my back is really the better for it this week. I'll tell you that much.
So you are probably a little bit looser than you would have been.
Oh, I am. I'm going to be loose for New Orleans tomorrow.
You're heading for New Orleans. You have a great trip there, and you're off then to my hometown of Chicago. You've been covering the Southern Arizona Humane Society dust up that resulted in Steve Farley, of course, well-known person in this community, basically losing his job.
Yeah, he was fired.
Yeah, fired. What's the latest on that?
So right now, the Humane Society of Southern Arizona has is conducting what they're calling an outside party investigation. They've hired a firm here in Tucson to look into what happened with about 320 small animals who were transferred from San Diego's Humane Society to Southern Arizona. And those animals were subsequently that night taken from Humane Society of Southern Arizona to some unnamed family private rescue, which happened to be tied to a reptile breeding as well.
Oh, boy, yeah.
Folks in San Diego and as well as in Tucson are wanting a full accounting of what happened to about 250 of those 300
animals. You know, one of the fundamental questions in this story has been, why in the world did San Diego why did they single out, let's send over these 300 little animals over to Tucson?
So my understanding and my reporting so far is that San Diego, they are a very well-funded and very well-respected humane society. They just didn't have room for that many small animals, and these are rabbits, guinea pigs, those sort of animals. Mm-hmm. And they actually sent kind of a feelers out to other nearby humane societies, and Tucson reached out and said, hey, we can help, and which is a little suspicious because Humane Society of Southern Arizona doesn't have anywhere near the capacity to hold those animals. So the whole kind of transaction has been suspicious from the jump. And there's allegations basically of nefarious doings on the part of
Well, I hope the investigation gets to the bottom of it, because, as you know, one of the third rail issues in this community when it comes to animal welfare issues,
Huge.
And San Diego, too.
Yes. Oh, both
so
communities.
You've got two really, really strong animal welfare communities.
Yeah. I've had plenty of advocates from both reach out to me with information. An advocate actually, some of the animals that were taken to this rescue were actually returned to the Humane Society of Southern Arizona. And folks from San Diego came out when they heard that and adopted nearly the rest of them. It was a very bad PR look. It was a very bad just... move overall for Humane Society of Southern Arizona. And so we really do need to get to the bottom of this in the investigation.
Yeah, and being a huge animal welfare advocate myself, I hope it doesn't translate into fewer dogs and cats being adopted.
And that's the fear, is that something like this really undermines the trust that the community has in what's always been a pretty trustworthy institution in the Humane Society of Southern Arizona. That's where we got our first pets in my family.
Well, I've always been a huge supporter of the Pima Animal Care Center, but I also support the work that is done here at the Humane Society. Mm. So let's hope that the adoptions don't suffer from this. Eddie, any stories coming up that we should look for? You got anything in the paper this Sunday?
Not this Sunday. I'm going to be out in
the
Big Easy.
I'm
New heading out there.
Right.
When I come back, I've got a story that I'm working on about cannabis tourism. I'll be heading to Las Vegas not too soon after I get back. But there are multiple hotels and Airbnbs opening up throughout the Southwest that are cannabis friendly. And the first of them have just made their way into the Tucson market. So I'm hoping to get the story on that and where the kind of next frontier for cannabis is when it comes to tourism and travel.
Good idea. Yeah. I don't know if Nevada is as friendly, cannabis friendly as Arizona. Or...
In certain ways, it is. In certain ways, it's not.
Okay, we'll leave it right there. Eddie Celaya, thank you, Eddie. And we'll look for your work in the Arizona Daily Star and on your podcast, Hear Weed Go. And that is easy to find. Just put in WEED, Hear Weed Go, and it will take you there.
That's
on Google.
Right.
Yep. Thanks, Eddie.
Thank you.
All right, coming up next, Weekend Watch with Matt Russell right after a quick break.
Noble Hops is Tucson's original gastropub, serving an ever-changing menu of craft beer and fine fare. Savor the majestic mountain views from the perfect for any season spacious patio at West Lambert Lane and North La Cañada Drive in Oro Valley. Order in or take out at Noble Hops, a pub for foodies. On the web at noblehops.com. The Regional Transportation Authority Plan is funded by a voter-approved half-cent sales tax. The RTA is collected throughout Pima County and averages more than $100 million in revenue each month. The RTA is the largest annual funder of regional transportation improvements in the region. The RTA is preparing a new 20-year plan for public review. Sign up at rtanext.com for updates.
International Airport, we are nonstop for our community. Our main priorities are providing a safe and secure travel experience and excellent customer service. We're also nonstop for landing prosperity in Southern Arizona by attracting new flights for business travel and family getaways. When your airport thrives, our community thrives. So fly local, fly TUS. Tucson International Airport is nonstop for Tucson.
The nonprofit Tucson Wildlife Center has been helping injured, sick, and orphan wildlife in Southern Arizona since 1999. They're dedicated to the rescue, medical care, and rehabilitation of sick, injured, and orphan wildlife, with the goal of releasing them back to their natural habitat. Around 5,000 animals a year come to them, as they are the only wildlife rescue in Southern Arizona. All made possible through donations. They receive no government funding. Please donate at TucsonWildlife.com.
Hi, this is Irene Coppola, President and CEO of the Better Business Bureau serving Southern Arizona. The BBB sets the standards for marketplace trust by engaging with and educating consumers and businesses. The BBB is the resource to turn to for the objective, unbiased information on businesses offering national and local consumer services online and in person. Learn more about the many services offered by the Better Business Bureau at bbb.org.
The Friends of Pima Animal Care Center is the nonprofit partner to our Pima County Animal Shelter. We grant critically needed resources to PACC so that it can continue the amazing life-saving progress it has made in recent years. Your generosity helps us find homes for abused, neglected, and abandoned animals at PAC. Learn how you can help at friendsofpacc.org.
And away we go with a weekend watch with Matt Russell, presented by our friends in Silver City and Grant County, New Mexico, where the weather is perfect, 70 degrees. And that translates into, wow, beautiful hiking weather. Autumn in New Mexico, always very, very pretty. Only about a three-hour drive from Tucson. Start your planning by visiting southwestnewmexico.org. There you will find all sorts of tempting recreational ideas, some great places to stay, and some great places to dine. And speaking of dining and good eating, Matt Russell, award-winning Tucson publicist and dedicated foodie, is with us for our weekend watch. Matt, how are you?
I'm doing great. Nice to have you back on the air after your visit to the City of Angels.
Yeah, I had a great visit over in Santa Monica. Boy, what a beautiful area. And the Georgian Hotel, they have completely restored it to its 1933 Art Deco luster. Boy, it's beautiful. We've got Halloween coming up, so don't tell me we've got a nightmare somewhere.
Yeah, you know, Halloween isn't until next Tuesday, but Halloweekend is here. And one of the best ways to kick it off is tonight at Nightmare on Congress Street, downtown Tucson's biggest Halloween party in the very haunted Hotel Congress. The evening is going to feature two costume contests with thousands of dollars in cash and prizes, live music from local artists, some DJ entertainment, craft vendors, and of course, lots of spooky food and drink specials. And of course, for me, the spookier the better. $25 gets you in the door to this 21 years old and up event. Head over to hotelcongress.com for all the details.
Boy, I hope you have retired that costume that you wore for many years. It's a you know the one, the black skeleton outfit.
Not a chance, Bill. Not a chance. We're just getting it all dusted off and ready to go.
Oh, I thought maybe you left it at the dry cleaners. Pick it up. All right. If it's weekend watch, there's got to be beer in there somewhere.
Sure. And you know what? Save that costume for Saturday, too. You can participate in the annual Beers, Bikes, and Booze, a collaboration with Pueblo Vida Brewing, Dragoon Brewing, and Tap and Bottle downtown. You can take a self-guided bike ride in your Halloween costume on Saturday between noon and 5. You can start at any one of the three locations, and the first 100 registered participants get some spooky swag. So tickets are just $15 each. You get a route map, you get a beer at each location, and some frightening fun times. This is going to be a lot of fun.
Anybody doing a scary brunch?
Yeah, the scaries are going to bleed into Sunday as well. The Monica downtown will host a Sunday scary brunch from 8 a.m. to 3, located at 40 East Congress. They're going to be serving up some creepy croissants and scary sips of spirits and other libations, and of course, a full spectrum of all of their standard brunch items: French toast, eggs Benedict, pancakes, tamales, burgers, Bloody Marys. I mean, I could go on and on. It's what I call a blow-me-away brunch. It's Sunday at the Monica, and go ahead and leave that costume on again from Friday and Saturday to get all the mileage you possibly can out of it.
That sure is a scary weekend watch. Matt Russell, thank you very much, and we'll look forward to seeing you in your costume somewhere in town. Thanks.
Indeed. Thank you.
All right. The Buckmaster Show is a presentation of Bill Buckmaster Communications, LLC, which is wholly responsible for the content of our program. Original theme music composed by our German friend Christophon, thanks to my assistant, Rosemary Brandt, and everybody here at KVOI, including Tom Fairbanks, my longtime engineer and producer on our Friday program, the entire team at Bustos Media Tucson. Everybody here always makes the Buckmaster Show crew feel very, very welcome. Be well, everybody. Stay safe, and I hope everyone has a lovely weekend.